You are now listening to the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. For more information, visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts.
Hello, and thanks for listening to TKF United, Volume 2, Watchdog Season.
Yeah, woohoo!
Wait, are we still Stadium Talk
that Rocks? Stadium Talk that Rocks.
I love that tag.
Yeah.
From the bushes.
At this point, it seems like that's always going to be the case, the way things are going, but we'll get to that later.
We'll always be talking about the stadium.
We're back. We're back, and we are ready to talk about Mission Valley and some soccer news. News and reports, I guess. I'm joined today by DK Aniwo and Drew Steck and Travis Russell.
Hi, this is DK. Guys.
Don't everybody talk at once.
Yeah. Later on, we're going to talk with Ry Rivard from The Voice of San Diego. But let's talk a little bit about this man who's in town.
Ooh.
His name's Warren Smith.
Warren Smith.
And he's the president-ish.
I believe president and founder, I believe is his title, of the to-be-named San Diego USL team. USL standing for the United Soccer League.
Yeah.
That's him.
And so as of now, the brand that they have is we're listening. We're listening to San Diego. We want to know what San Diego is. We want to know what San Diego cares about. Drew, you've been a little bit a part of the marketing process. Have you seen?
Yeah, I've been in a couple of their listening sessions.
Yeah, how'd
that
go?
I was in an initial kind of supporters one, as well as a couple different reach outs. And each time they kind of have new, either questions, or it seems like they're forming more and more of an idea of what they want. Right now, their logo is a big ear for listening to everybody.
Oh, I get it.
And it's a so that might be what they go with. I don't know. Maybe it'll evolve. But for now, it's been really interesting to see them kind of approach this from an angle of we want this to be something that people feel is organic, but it also, by its very nature, is contrived. Right? It's in a very short amount of process. It seems like they want to get up and running either by March is what they're saying, kind of in rumblings, or by 2021. So either way, you're don't have a 2 or 3 year kind of layout here of multiple seasons before you work up to your finale for the brand rollout. So it really does have to feel like something that maybe was always there, but just didn't see in a certain light, or maybe was attached a different way.
Hmm. So what is the USL? It's for people who don't know. It's like a slightly lower league than the MLS, but it's a big deal, and it just got a deal with ESPN.
Yeah. TV. So the USL has been around for I think over 20 years in various different forms. I think they really started rising to prominence in 2013 when at the time. So you guys are baseball guys. I'm not as familiar with baseball, but I know you have the majors, AAA, double A, single A. So I'll try to use that analogy. Yeah. But basically, at the time in 2013, they were effectively a double A league. They signed this developmental deal with Major League Soccer, whereby MLS teams who have reserve teams and sort of youth teams would start to put their teams in the USL. Right? Mm-hmm. USL has always been a standalone professional league. And so in the last, 5 or 6 years, they've really aggressively and rapidly grown to a league that went, I think at the time when they signed that deal, they had about 13 different teams in their third division league, whereby now they've got close to 40. I think it's 36 teams. They've been promoted, so they are now technically a AAA league as far as the baseball analogy goes. Mm-hmm. They've since started another. So they basically launched in the second division and then kicked off a third division. So they've got two different leagues that they operate at the professional level. They've got another third league that they sort of operate at the amateur level. And even further beneath that, they operate a nationwide youth soccer league called the Super Y League. So USL actually is significantly larger than MLS. It is not the sort of pinnacle. It's not the tip of the pyramid. But it's a very well-established league. They're headquartered in Tampa, Florida. And they've been around for a long time. And I think they're very savvy about what it is that they do. The way that they have built out the infrastructure underneath MLS, while MLS is continuing to grow and expand, has been very deliberate, very strategic, and I'm actually quite a big fan of the league structure overall.
Yeah.
It's definitely the base. If you're looking at the pyramid analogy, I actually have a list on Twitter that I call the base that's mostly USL personalities and people involved with lower division soccer, but it is very vast and kind of the way it grew in the last 10 years. If you look at it, it's just exploded.
Yeah.
Across the country. And the time that Lululemon became a thing that people know about everywhere, that's the time in which USL has gone from what was a handful of markets to now being in pretty much every pocket of the country.
Wow. So Warren has brought on Landon Donovan, and this is this going to be the tip of the spear for the soccer community? Like, I mean, there's also going to be the 1904 club that's starting in about a week and a half.
That's correct. So, yeah.
I mean, is that overextending itself? I don't know. And that's not the right question, but like, is this going to be the focal point for the soccer community, you think?
The USL team versus 1904?
Yeah, the USL.
I think that the soccer community, if nothing else, is very diverse and kind of looks for different things. And I think one thing that I would consider an opportunity over these next, 3 to 6 months, as 1904 looks to get up and running in a completely different, totally separate third division league that kicks off this weekend, September 7th. Their first home game is September 14th.
Right.
Yeah, here against, I think, a team from L.A. Completely separate, right? And so I think the two different clubs that are launching this USL program that doesn't have a name yet, and then this 1904 FC, which tried to launch a couple years ago in a different league and sort of taking their lumps and, you know, to their credit, you know, still fighting and still looking to kick balls. I think there'll be different people attracted to different teams for different reasons. I do suspect that the USL movement will maybe be more popular, maybe more mainstream, if you will. I know that the 1904 people pride themselves on being soccer purists, and they talk so much about the game itself and not very much about branding and marketing, and that's somewhat reflective in sort of how they've conducted themselves. I know they're very serious about playing soccer. USL, I think, is, like I said, a more professional, polished, developed product. And they look to do more than just play the game.
When you look at the investment and you look at the kind of deals struck with the various leagues that they're in, they're Division II and Division III, but you have kind of a compare and contrast in the sense of the umbrella from the USL level is they're looking at ESPN as a distributor deal. So ESPN Plus, they just signed a multi-year deal with them. And then now NISA or 1904's league is with MyCujo, which is a worldwide streaming brand, but it's definitely something where people have to search it out a little bit more. So just from that aspect, right, you're looking at just kind of different revenue in terms of the clubs, and then as well as just exposure overall. So I think 1904 might be more of an inexperienced type of thing, whereas it doesn't get as much exposure on television besides, you know, maybe nightly highlights on the local news, versus you might have more people actually gathering to watch USL just because it's more accessible, right? So maybe just by pure nature of where these things sit, you see some of that. But the investment is definitely larger on the second division team. However, they're both going to have kind of their own unique flair, and you see somewhat their the way that they've evolved over time. 1904, as I said, did come up over a number of years here. And does just kind of have roots of talking to everybody in the soccer community for years, whereas USL is making that more active sense to listen instead of being able to have that dialogue because they just don't have the time.
Yeah. And the USL, they're going to play at USD.
Correct.
That's a 6,000 seat stadium.
Correct.
As of now, but there's talk of them maybe expanding it. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think when the first game hits, they might be able to pack that like immediately?
Or? I suspect that home opener will be a sellout.
Yeah.
I hope it is.
I think it's good. I mean, yeah. It sounds good.
Well, they've said they're actually going to add capacity as well in some form. So it won't be a hard six. It'll be somewhat a little bit over that. And I do think that their aim is to sell out most of that until they move to somewhere that they said recently. I heard somebody say, I think it was either Warren or Landon, say that a 12 to 15,000 would be their ideal for a long-term home base somewhere in the county. But building stadiums is, as everybody knows, a different proposition than playing in one that's already been there for about 80 years or so.
Yeah. I mean, playing football on your own campus, that's crazy.
Yeah, right.
just kidding, guys.
Say that for the second time.
Well, the history there is great, too. Torero's been around a lot longer than people know, and it actually is a pretty historical stadium. And the views from there, you can just see the drone footage now of, you know, kind of a sweeping view and then, you know, cutting to the field. So it'll look really nice there for sure. And then, you know, 1904 kind of has a big net for people to show up and kind of a blank canvas, if you will, I think, to show up to the queue and maybe bring back some old memories in some ways and then channel that towards whatever they end up kind of moving towards in the future. But it'll definitely be interesting to see what they roll out here, just in a few weeks.
Yeah, in 1904, where are they getting the talent from? Are they basically, they've had a couple open tryouts, right? And then
I'll peel back a little bit. I don't want to get off course, but this 1904 team is co-owned and operated by a couple European-based professional players who are sort of still, I'd say, the peak of their career. I mean, Demba Ba is maybe winding down a little bit. He's sort of the lead investor on this, but people like Eden Hazard and Johan Kabay, who are also sort of European-based professional players, They're the ones who have sort of conceptualized this vision of a club that they can call their own. When they do eventually hang up their boots and retire, they want to move to San Diego and sort of just give their lives to this thing. They first tried to launch in San Diego about two and a half years ago. And for a variety of different reasons that take too long to explain now, they basically failed. And so over the course of the last 2 years, though, they've had a team of people here on the ground who have been watching a lot of different games and who have been scouting and looking at the Southern California talent pool. So there are a number of players who they've identified over these last few years. But then they also are, yeah, looking to hold tryouts and give people the opportunity. I think, like I said, a big part of what they do is try to encapsulate that culture of, you know, if you're good enough, you're old enough, right? And if, like, if you can play, then you can stay. And so they do host open tryouts with the idea of, you know, these talented players who maybe haven't quite found their break or whatever can come out. But they've been on the ground here for some time.
If you look at their Instagram, you can meet a few of the new faces. They're rolling out a real good campaign where you can actually see, you know, it's either a little short video or a blurb about kind of a player that's, you know, on their roster there. I saw one from an SDSU alum, a Cholos Academy player. And so you got a few of those guys that have kind of been around the circuit a little bit, but have always circled San Diego. And now that there's a chance to play here professionally, they're able to engage.
Yeah.
And you might see some correlation of players. I don't think there's anything that prevents possibly a cross correlation of players from team to team. If one plays really well with one, they're in the market, they're available. You know, between seasons, you could possibly see some of that in the future as well. Mm-hmm. So as competition heats up, you could possibly see some of that off the field as well within teams in the city, which we've never had in any aspect.
For whatever reason, that had not occurred.
You never thought it. I literally just thought about that this afternoon. Yeah. Is that like, wait a second. Yeah. Some of these players that I'm looking at here, not to say like, oh, this guy's going to jump, but like you just don't know. Right. Because the contracts in soccer are just very different than most other leagues. Where there's just a little bit more mobility for the player to kind of go where, you know, where they're wanted and level up if that's, you know, what's in front of them.
And how is the USL going to work with like the development academy? Are they going to have their own kind of development side with youth soccer?
I severely doubt that the San Diego USL team will launch a youth anything.
Warren said in his recent interview that they're not planning on it just because of the development academies that are around a little bit.
Yeah, I was dancing around, but no, like to begin with, no. At some point, they will start to invest in their own club infrastructure, right? They'll have a reserve team, they'll have youth teams. They will have, if nothing else, I suspect, a team in each age group of the development academy, which starts at age 12 and basically is sort of the finishing school, if you will, for players who are on that professional pathway as they transition up into the amateur and then eventually the professional game. So at some point they will, but not to begin with, I don't think.
No. Yeah, so we don't really know if they're going to play in the next USL season. Is that
officially? They have not said anything.
There's been a lot of winking. And
when does their calendar start?
I've said is if the forecast was for rain, they're telling us that it's going to rain. So and that has essentially been, you know, kind of the wink is that if, you know, is looking at raining, just kind of like rain, you can never say 100% it's going to rain, right? In this case, you know, you're going to want to get an umbrella for 2020.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, I mean, that's going to hopefully we'll have a stadium agreement by then, you know, coincide.
Well, and that's, you know, maybe that'll all come together. And, you know, in March or so of 2020, we can be sitting here talking about future prospects as opposed to and possibly a future USL stadium, you know, in the cards, as opposed to having to talk about just the one we've been talking about forever. That would be nice to maybe look at other sites and other ideas and, you know, like just get out of Mission Valley and talk about stadiums elsewhere, Chula Vista, you know.
Yeah. So is that something you think is on the horizon where they're going to look for like maybe a 15 to 16,000 seat stadium or?
It would be. So Phoenix Rising is a really good model if you want to look at a club that's kind of done something similar where they put together what they call kind of a temporary stadium out of, and by temporary, they really just mean it's modular, and that's kind of a better word for it. Well, they bring together these parts that kind of build a grandstand in a certain section and then, you know, can have like kind of party tiers, and they actually have like they've slowly built up certain parts of their little stadium.
Similar to what 1904 was talking about doing in Oceanside when they first launched, sort of a temporary venue that is quick to construct and build and sort of implement. But I do believe that for the USL team here in San Diego, they are looking at, I think now, right now, honestly, I think their priority is just getting things
making game day experience, working on USD first. I think they want to get USD nailed down and then look to that future, but their eye is definitely there in terms of, they've made their denotation clear that they want that to be on the horizon once they get the club successful and they sell out that USD Torero Stadium.
Yeah, I believe the deal that they have there is 3 years with two additional option years. So in that interim, I think, like I said, right now the priority is very much to get ready for that first season, call it 2020. But I do believe that, yeah, once that's sort of dialed in, they will look to look for a permanent venue somewhere else.
As we know in San Diego, things never run out or run longer than you think they will. And, you know, obviously they're making an investment there at USD as well. So you kind of want to see that through possibly and say, hey, we want to take advantage of that if you put something in there. So. Who knows? But there's also for 1904, they've kind of made it clear that anywhere is on the table for them potentially. It could be on that site in Mission Valley. It could be somewhere else entirely. So that'll be kind of interesting as these clubs roll out on the field to see what fields are in their future.
So Warren Smith's big success story was basically the Sacramento market. And like, what size of stadium are they playing in? Is it like...
I believe the stadium that they play in there now is 12 or 13.
The highest attendance of anyone in the league by far. It's kind of well known.
He's probably the best person to be doing this, right?
If you were to pick someone, and USL essentially seems like, and he has his own story to tell about why he wants to come to San Diego, but. USL also said to him, hey, this is an opportunity that we think that you're, uniquely there for, and we would love to have you kind of, be part of this. So he was definitely pinpointed by certain people to take advantage of what happened after the vote here didn't go in the favor of soccer fans in the sense of, providing us an opportunity at least to get a team at a higher tier. And so in terms of that, his vision is very much to make this a spaceship in the sense of the best team in the league and shoot for the top of the league. And then past that, it's just, trying to keep it the best experience and the best thing possible with which they can contain. And as we know in sports with leagues, there's certain votes and certain things you could never contain except for showing up and being great fans. And I think that giving San Diego an experience to do that is what their number one priority is.
So what would you guys want to see as the
it was like 12 it's 11,569 for Sacramento, and I think they actually have more than that due to standing room, so I think they end up around like 12,000.
Like what were you leaning to, what were you hearing in the listening sessions about like the branding that they're working on?
So to me it's one of those things where I don't think they're looking at something that is specifically going to be like a San Diego FC or, just a very generic San Diego United or San Diego, something like that. And they've said it as much in interviews that they don't necessarily feel like a generic moniker like that. If they did go with something, it would be with a meaning, right? So if they did choose, Deportivo, it would be with some sort of, nod to something, right? As opposed to just, calling a club Deportivo because it sounds cool. DSD looks cool, right? You can make a, back to front logo. So like that seems just really basic and nice, and everybody's got their own version of that. Some people like AFC San Diego or for America's Finest City, or there's a lot of association mm-hmm. football clubs called like AFC Bournemouth in the Premier League. So that would be something we could actually like kind of ape from Europe, but we also put our own spin on it. So some people have liked that. Some people like the city flag colors. I tell people, that nobody really knows what the city flag looks like until they see it. And then they go, oh, yeah, I guess that's a city flag.
I guess I was just about to.
It also looks like look McDonald's right color. Here, yeah. So it's not my favorite, but some people like suggesting that. Some people like saying brown to kind of match up with the Padres. Some people got their Chargers, soccer's kick, and went blue and yellow. So I think everybody's got kind of a different take on it. Their lean overall has been definitely more towards the organic what's going to be here in 100 years versus, mm-hmm. Maybe what we like Fish Taco FC, right? Like that looks good on a t-shirt for a AA baseball team, but it's not necessarily the way that I think these they want to be as branded. Even if they are a minor league team, they want to have a brand that feels kind of prestigious and organic in some way to history and has a real meaning behind it.
Soccer City SDFC.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey,
it's available.
Yeah, right?
Check that domain.
It just comes to me, man.
We held an election, and all I got was this USL team. I'm excited for it. I do think to touch on that a little bit and touch on Soccer City kind of morphing into this. 1904 is kind of something that I called Zombie FC a little bit, but in a loving way, that it kind of has come back and found its home in a different league that's upstarting. That's a really promising, interesting little league. At this point that is going to grow year over year, it seems like. But with USL and with this team, I do think it'll be more of an organic. As we've said, it will feel a little bit rushed. But in terms of MLS, I think you'd have a lot of people just showing up because they said, hey, it's the next major league team. And, instead of the NBA, this is where I'm at, right? Versus this will still have, I think, as we said, soccer fans will gravitate towards both. and there's a great soccer culture here. And I do think that this is great for the generic soccer fan in the city, just in the sense of it's going to be more accessible than MLS would have been day one. And they've already been very accessible to the people. And that's where, I guess from the listening sessions, the biggest takeaway is they're extremely accessible and they're there to be talked to. And if you have something to say, they're there to listen for sure.
Cool. When do you think we'll find out what they decided on? Like, do we know?
I would give it 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay.
To maybe find out some things.
Yeah, I would forecast somewhere around there.
Yeah, I'd say by the end of the month of September, as far as what I know, they're hoping to start sharing. There should be some decent announcements coming out in the next few weeks, but that's just me. I guess my sort of two cents on this whole thing is that, like, for a very long time, soccer has been sort of, you know, tinkering around here in town, right? Different teams at different levels, NPSL, MLS, all everything kind of in between the amateur, the professional structure. This USL team and this 1904 team, for the first time in a long time, are two legitimate professional outlets who are looking to start kicking balls in the next 6 months or so. And so for the fan perspective, I think I'm just personally very excited to actually see something manifest, right? Because we've been talking about concepts and renderings and theories, and I can't tell you how many jersey mock-ups I've seen over these last few years. But for the first time in a long time, we really do have something that we can go and sit and watch and experience. And that, for me, is exciting.
Yeah. So the first 1904 game is coming up, right?
Yeah.
It's on the 14th.
The 14th is the first home
14th
game.
14th at 1904. So at 7:04 p.m. at the SDCCU or underscore stadium. It is going to be held there, and there'll be a few different things going on. I think there'll actually be – we're trying to get something cool going on in the parking lot either beforehand or that day. For kind of a tailgate thing, in terms of a few different soccer organizations have been kind of pulled into that. So we'll see. Hopefully, you know, a few people out at the parking lot. I'll see you in the parking lot.
Well, this is kind of a big deal because it will be in parallel to SDSU games, right? And there were some shots of this last weekend's game where it didn't seem very – it was a home game, right? I'm not
– Yeah. Against Weber or Weber?
It's Weber, right? Weber. I think it's Weber State, yeah. And it was kind of empty, right? And I heard a lot of talk on the radio about people were just hanging in the parking lot and then showing up for the Sky Show because that was what's going on. So this next weekend they're at home again, right, with UCLA?
They're going to the Rose Bowl, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying this game I think is a big deal. I think San Diego needs to show up, fill up the seats.
The 1904
game, right? And then the next home game, the shots of the stadium and how full it is really going to show us how well San Diego voted.
That is the very rudimentary capitalist argument for sure. I will say
I think that 1904 might have a great chance of blowing this out of the water from what I saw of Weber.
Yeah.
Right.
What do you guys think? We'll see. I
want to know how are ticket sales going. Do you guys have any idea how
I don't
the 1904
know.
Is going?
I don't know about ticket sale counts. I know that there has been some price adjustment based on I think maybe a misidentified price point early on. To be honest, and I'm not trying to poo-poo 1904. I don't expect them to sell out. I don't expect them.
You don't even have to sell.
I don't expect them to challenge the attendance record for Weber State. I don't expect that. Unless somehow the Aztecs come out for 1904. I'm not expecting it to be like a big thing. Okay. On day one, but I do believe...
Or if, they have some sort of crazy flash sale at the last minute that shows
the
up. But
price
I don't think... The way that they've kind of approached their branding at this point in this iteration has been to say, we're going to roll out a ball. We're not expecting much from you, even. We're saying, hey, we want to be San Diego's team. We want to be here for you. But we're not necessarily saying that we're going to... own that experience day one and say that we're going to be, you know, a fully formed thing day one. We're going to grow as we grow with the city and grow into something, you know, from there. So I think in that sense, that's where I'm not expecting a big thing. I think the real mark will be year two. So their next year opening day, how much has it grown percentage wise?
Yeah.
And then also what are we looking at in terms of a culture growing around those games? I don't even want to throw out a prediction because I feel like it'll be like wrong or somehow like even less than that. But like, it's definitely going to be, you know, one of those where it's not going to be fun to take stadium seat pictures just because that thing is just a giant mausoleum for anybody who, you know, isn't an NFL team. And even those were hard to get in there.
Oh, see, and I was way more optimistic about it.
Yeah, no.
I wish, but I want to say that come be part of something new.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what
be
I was
there
saying.
On the ground
like,
level.
I think that there's a lot bigger draw to this than the state games.
Well, they're gonna, maybe you can make up a chant that people say forever. You know, you never know.
They're going to have like limited sections open, so it might be a little tighter than...
Yeah, they're not going to try and have it be free flowing where you can sit up in the upper deck or anything. Yeah, they'll have it be kind of tight.
The prices are really reasonable. Yeah, it's like $19 is like the most expensive seat.
Yeah, if you take a family, $5 kids, you know, parents and a kid is under $50 to get through the door, which is pretty good.
I will definitely be there. All I'm saying is that I don't think that the club right now is expecting a whole lot. I think that they are very much focused on being their best selves and honestly earning the respect and the adoration of the San Diego market. I would, though, very much like to encourage everyone else to join me. If you guys want to come cruise with, let me know.
And my point in this is the bar is not that high.
Correct.
So no. I don't think that like there's any pressure for them at all.
Oh, totally. How about this, San Diego? Come and tailgate. Yeah, I don't know how much parking is going to be. I'm hoping it's. Do you know how much parking is going to be, DK? Is it free? Do we know?
I'm taking the trolley.
Okay, well, take a trolley, but come and hang out for the tailgate, even, right? Yeah, just come and tailgate.
And
if you feel moved, go buy a ticket and go in. Yeah. I think that the nice thing is we know it's not going to be a sellout, so you can come and tailgate, and then if you want to hang out, great.
See some good soccer.
If not, maybe come next time and go. But yeah, it's definitely one of those things where I think everybody's always loved going back to that stadium for an event, even when it's just kind of weird and different and totally not what we used to go to as kids. So for me, it will definitely be a fun event just to kind of see something different that says San Diego in the chest playing in that stadium.
Yeah, it's been since the Chargers left that I've seen a game there. So
it's been that long for me.
Wow.
Let's fix that, Travis.
I know.
I went to three soccer really games in that time there, Travis.
I know.
we're gonna come back next week with another TKF United, and then probably in a few weeks later we'll have another episode. Maybe we'll have a name to talk about or a USL rollout.
Yeah,
an identity.
Maybe we'll do a live pod from the event.
So real quick predictions on UCLA. What do we think is going to happen then?
Well, I think they're going to lose. I think UCLA is probably going to win, but I don't know. I don't want to get into the prediction game.
I'm calling a shocker. I'm calling it a 5-2, just because it's an even weirder scoreline than last week. And Chip Kelly being held to 2 points would be the funniest thing ever that was scored by his defense.
Yeah.
Oh god.
Well, let's.
That's not realistic.
No, sorry. But
so I'm just gonna do one last little thing. I know. Yes. So we're recording on a Wednesday. This is maybe going out Thursday.
Should be out tonight.
All right. So tomorrow, September 5th, 1904, actually is having an event at Punch Bowl Social downtown. They're launching their kit. They are doing a few different things. It starts at when my computer loads. I'll tell you. Starts at 6 p.m.
There you go.
Punch Bowl Social downtown. So if you listen to this in the next 12 hours, go for it.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk to our friend from the Voice of San Diego, Rye Rivard. He's done a lot of reporting on the Mission Valley Stadium deal, and we just got to check in with him. Got to
find out about these ponds, man.
Yeah. I want to learn all about
what's going on with the ponds.
All about everything from Rye.
Yeah.
TKF United.
All right, we're back with Rye Rivard from the Voice of San Diego. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you guys?
Good.
Great.
Hi, Rye.
Hey.
Yeah. Well, we had you on because we wanted to talk to you about the Mission Valley Stadium deal that is happening behind closed doors. I mean, what do you think what's it going to be like when it finally drops for you? Are you going to wake up in the middle of the night with a blowing up cell phone or
I think there's going to be a couple of different ways this could go down. There could be a nice little happy press conference. There could be some documents on a docket somewhere. I don't know how in what manifestation we'll first hear about what has really been going on, but I look forward to it.
It feels WikiLeaks worthy at this point, right? Like isn't this gonna feels like some kind of file dump somewhere on some server.
Yeah, I mean, I would love that. That's we're in court trying to get it legally, but I'm not suggesting that we should get it illegally. But if somebody just handed me a bunch of papers or mailed them to 110 West A Street, Suite 650, San Diego, California 92101, then I'd have them.
So do you think? Why do you think we're waiting this long? Should we have known by now? Is there any red flags coming up about that?
Well, I mean, there's a tiny red flag, which is that the university had hoped to have things or some kind of tentative agreement by August. You know, we're talking on September, what, 3rd, 4th here. So that didn't happen. The university still has told me a couple weeks ago, you know, that their real and ultimate goal is to have something that they can take to the California State University Board of Trustees in January so that they can get approval for everything and then break ground early next year. You know, missing one deadline doesn't mean you're going to miss every deadline, but missing one deadline, you know, is a deadline that's missed.
Yeah. Is it the first deadline? Big one, right?
I mean, it's a deadline that they talked about. I mean, when they were in front of, when SDSU was in front of the San Diego City Council back in April, they said, hey, you know, we really would love to have something so we can, you know, they're hiring consultants, they're hiring architects, they're hiring construction people, but, you know, they don't own the land to do any of that stuff on yet.
Yes, right.
So that seems like an obstacle to building a thing.
I have one side question to this. Why? What's the strategy to do it in private? Is it so that like a bunch of rumors and speculation don't spin out of control? Or what's the rationale? You want to know as it's going along, why won't they let you know?
Well, I think there is
a legitimate reason, yeah.
There are legitimate reasons that when you're negotiating something, you don't want everybody being like, well, I wouldn't have said that, or I wouldn't grant that, or, you know, I wouldn't accept those terms. And then there's also, I think, the mayor's own personal experience and the city government's own institutional experience with the San Diego Chargers. Negotiating public with them was completely unproductive and a total disaster for years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like so they're going to if an agreement comes together, they'll publish it in some way and then it goes to the city council, right? And does that seem like it'll pass, like if the mayor and the university get together on something?
Well, that was one of the city council president's concerns back in April was she said, "Hey, look, if you're going to give us a deal, it'd be good if it would be something we could support." And so,
yeah.
So it isn't entirely clear how looped in the city council is if they're saying, yeah, no, that's a thing that we're not comfortable with, or yeah, you can go that far, or you can't go that far. So that is a concern if you have a bunch of behind closed doors negotiations that when they get out from behind closed doors, the people that actually have to sign the piece of paper to agree to it are like, well, we wouldn't have done that.
Yeah. So is it a big part of what will end up being Kevin Faulkner's legacy to get this done? I mean, does he have to do this? I mean, it seems like he's tethered himself to the university with scarves, you know? I mean,
right, you're talking about that.
No, I know, but like, I mean,
the new, you got a new logo there, too.
No, I know, but
you're bringing the scarf in.
Is he under a lot of pressure to make sure that this happens while he's still mayor? And if he doesn't, does that roll into the next election? Well, I mean, could the timeline work out that way?
I mean, you know, remember there was this time not that long ago where if the Chargers left, it was going to be like part of the end of his political career.
Right.
And, well, it wasn't. So I would hesitate to predict that it's that serious a deal. I think he's facing pressures in both directions. I mean, the voters said, hey, we want the university to own this land. But there's also this pressure from people that are more concerned about the city's bottom line saying, well, don't give them too much. And so I don't know how it breaks down for him politically. He's in between two things, which is why it's a complicated negotiation. Yeah. And I mean, remember the other thing that, I mean, just talking a little bit about city politics for him, I mean, the thing that came out of the blue is this hepatitis A thing. I mean, everybody was talking about the Chargers and football and all this stuff, and then people just started dying in the street. And, you know, sometimes what you think is going to make somebody's political legacy doesn't, and something you've never heard of does.
Yeah. I have a question.
Let's go.
Why is it so, it's seemingly so hard to get something done in San Diego? I mean, it's been proven over and over again. I would love your opinion on it and all the ways that you cover. I can speak from personal experience on a couple, you know, non-sports related things on how hard it is to get things done in San Diego. Is this right now missing the deadline more SDSU or is it the city? Why does it seem impossible to get things done in San Diego?
Well,
hyperbolically.
Cheer up, Travis. Cheer up.
I mean, if you, on the one hand, we've seen all of these things not happen. We saw something with the Chargers not happen. We, you know, you can point to all these things in the city that you'd want that you haven't seen yet. But, you know, I mean, you know, you can go to the library and you can check out a library book. So some things work, you know.
Right.
And it's only been, it's been less than a year at this point between since the voters said, yeah, this is what we want. And it's a big deal. And so when you're talking something that took decades to not work out, replacing Qualcomm, right. You know, giving it a year to try and work it out isn't that crazy.
So I'm just being pessimistic, you think, at this point?
I mean, it's reasonable.
There's a validity to what you're saying, though, I think, is that people wouldn't necessarily rank this out of the options of that for what was placed on that site for the last 20 years or so of ideas for that site. Was this the number one idea? It won the vote, but was it the best idea? Like, if you were power ranking these ideas, would it necessarily be number one? And I think, like, that's where people somewhat have reservations on, is it going to pan out the way we want, even if it pans out well, right? Like, is that the, you know, will of the people who voted? Yes, for sure. But is it the will of, you know, the best idea, or was it just the best, you know, slugger in the race that it was in, I guess?
Yeah, you know, SDSU and I think the sort of anti-SDSU crowd have sort of two different versions of this. SDSU said, you know, we've been talking for a while, we want to expand, it would be logical to do it in Mission Valley, yes. And then there was also the sort of Soccer City, the back and forth with SDSU and Soccer City, where SDSU didn't seem quite assertive in saying, well, we want all of this space or we don't want you using this space. And so I guess there are different versions of whether it's the best idea still to this day, even though the voters...
Well, surely, opportunity cost, from a tax base has been lost the second we lost an NFL team, which we didn't have power over, but you would say that was the highest amount of opportunity cost we had for that site, was having that kind of an asset there in terms of generating revenue, right? And so now that that's gone, you have a long-term generator in a university, but the measure of that, right, is long-term versus something short term. So I think from a taxpayer perspective, I think that's what's kind of interesting with that site, is it's been a boondoggle for years based on the ticket guarantee, based on everything. And so I think the emotionality there is negative, right? Everything with that site is negative for the last 30 years or so, since 98, really.
And so where do you place the Padres leaving the site and the continuum? You'd say that was definitive?
I think once they left, it signaled the end of, okay, well, we can't claim that this is dual purpose, and now there's one entity that we're essentially dealing with, and that entity is corrupted in the head as of about 2004, 2005, based on the paper trail. And from there, it all just played out, right?
And so since then, it was a parking lot.
Yeah.
With some games every now and then.
And so now the opportunity is, okay, well, this is going to be great if they pull it off. My biggest question, I guess, would be the components of this deal, right? So the financing, is that necessarily the issue? Is it the assessment, really? Do you think that's holding it up at this point? Is that, okay, well, we definitely know that there's some toxicity there. We know that there's been some cleanup. I think that there's definitely been, at least in my estimation, from the people who are somewhat educated, still some back and forth about what needs to be done. So I think, where are the grayish areas you think that maybe would be holding things up in that sense?
You're talking about the water quality issues?
Yeah, like the specifics that would maybe be holding up this sort of a deal from becoming more public, because the sticking points are just a little bit too gray in a certain area.
I mean, I think that's certainly possibly one of them. And, you know, we've heard sort of mixed things. I think we reported a while ago, my colleague Lisa Halverstadt wrote that shouldn't be an issue, that they thought they had it under control. At one point, somebody was saying, well, why aren't we drinking this water, you know, during the drought, which was to me an indication of, you know, maybe it's not fouled up. But you know, there's more testing being done. So, and there's also the liability, even if you think you know what's there. So there's definitely that. There's the demolition costs, you know, does that get deducted from the sale price or not? There's who pays for the maintenance of the river park. I think that's a sticking point. And then there's the morass of, you know, who builds what traffic infrastructure. Yeah.
Do you think the deal, when the deal is presented to the public, do you think it could just be so complicated that most people won't really be able to understand it? And then the council just kind of goes with it? I mean, could that scenario happen?
I mean,
we don't know what's in it until we sign it. Is that what you're saying?
I'm curious to okay, so when this gets laid out, like, are the Soccer City people going to be automatically upset? And then, hey, DK, what's up?
Yeah, what are you going to be upset, man?
No, I'm
I'll be happy. I'll be glad when this is done.
Okay.
I'll be glad, yeah, when something happens as somebody who was vocal the other way for most of it. But I do think that there's a sense in my area, at least from, you know, the people that I talk to, that, yeah, we just want to see something happen and get laid out that's, you know, at least a number, and then we can talk about that number, right? If that number is substantially lower than what some people think it is, I think there will definitely be more outcry. It depends on the threshold of whatever that big number is in terms of a evaluation of the site from their angle, I guess.
And there's already been simplification of message there. I mean, pardon me if I'm wrong about this, but Soccer City couldn't necessarily guarantee that there would be a soccer team, the professional soccer team there.
That is correct, because they don't have the ability, or did not have the ability, to actually award an expansion franchise. That's the purview of the league that they would have probably gotten into.
Yeah, I mean, so likely, but, you know, you're voting for getting soccer, and there was some chance that there wasn't soccer. I think some people voted for the SDSU option, saying, well, you know, we need the research space. Well, my colleague Kayla Jimenez did a story saying, well, there's a lot of research space. It's not clear that and then, you know, people...
Saturated?
Yeah, it's saturated. There was also, you know, talk about housing and student housing, and it's not clear if all of it or any of it's going to be student housing, or how much of it will be student housing.
Well, how many students need to leave on campus in the future? You know, what future campuses look like? You know, that's all kind of up in the air as well. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, and then the same thing with the River Park. You know, people, I think, had the general impression that SDSU would be paying for and maintaining the River Park. That wasn't the exact promise. So I think as complicated as something can be, it could still be simplified, even if that's not always correct.
And on your Reddit post that you did, there was a talk about, like, how, you know, basically how SDSU is going to pay for it. They need a partner, right? I mean, how does that search go?
You're speaking specifically about the stadium or just the entire parcel?
Just the whole
project. Development. They need partnerships.
Yeah, I mean,
without raising tuition. I mean,
right. So I mean, it's all the whole time they've said we're going to pay for this through revenue from where we've asked, and we've gotten some sort of generic, you know, there'll be naming rights for the stadium, there'll be concessions, there'll be other events for the, you know, development of the houses and the retail space and the hotel. It's, you know, public-private partnerships, which ones for what, you know, what terms. I mean, they're saying we're going to make money from it, but I don't know, you know.
Yeah. Do you have any questions, DK?
No, I'm just glad to be in the presence of Ryan Rivard.
So when the deal comes out, they could just take off, like, the demolition and the River Park, essentially. Is that what's been speculated on?
I mean, that's one of the things the university represented to the city back in April. They said, you know, one thing we'd be interested in is deducting the price of the demolition, which is a cost of owning the land, from the sale of the land. I don't know as of, like, right this second where the city stands on that, but you could see why that would be a conflict-inducing talking.
Well, it also does border a freeway, so they could also make a case that possibly that freeway and the maintenance of the area surrounding that, at least from, like, a, you know, maintenance perspective, shouldn't fall onto a university long term, right? So that should fall in the way of probably the state or the city, right?
Oh, like Caltrans?
Yeah. So, yeah, everybody's favorite.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the list of agencies that have to be involved just to permit the thing, it's nausea-inducing.
Daunting.
To say the least, right?
SAT word right there. Yeah. I mean, traffic alone is going to be the biggest one. Speaking, again, from personal experience, it's just going to be quite a bit of traffic to get that done. But I wanted to ask, is there a timeline going forward that we can look forward to an update or some kind of agreement, or do you have any news on that?
Not right now. I mean, if we don't see something soon, they can't get it done by the end of the year, and that would be a problem from the university's perspective.
There's nothing in the law or anything that has triggers for certain timelines or anything like that, is there?
I think there's some triggers for what the university needs to do once they own the land, but they essentially have 20 years to reach a deal with the city before...
Really?
I mean, the city can't reach a deal with anybody else but the university for 20 years unless the voters go back and change that.
I guess...
Wow. So essentially, if they can't agree to, like, a price, if that just keeps going and going and going, it could go for 20 years unless someone says, we're going to create another initiative to force them to make a decision by this date? Because there's no there's no triggers in the law.
Correct. Yes.
Wow. That's kind of fun.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
The anticipation is amazing.
We'll be here.
Yeah, I mean, we have...
the stadium will be there.
We just have to wait. Like, at least with voting and stuff, you get, like, a date to
look forward to.
Yeah,
circle on the calendar.
Is there a canary in the coal mine at all for this, just in terms of, like, when we'll feel like something's happening? Like, we'll see shuffling of papers, at least, to know that...
this is so amazingly...
Like, it's just so... vague. Yeah, just, like, it's a shroud of darkness. It's the mist from the film The Mist, where you don't know that it's there. It's just slowly creeps up on you.
I mean, in some ways, no. But in other ways, like... what has to happen is this: some part of this deal has to be approved. Like, the deal has to be approved by the city council. It has to be approved by the Cal State Board of Trustees. So if you don't see them getting a piece of paper that says, here's what we're talking about, you know there's a problem.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. And so, sorry, the CSU meeting is late January, and obviously it would have to pass city council before going to CSU, or is it CSU and then city council?
I think the city council gets first whack at it and then it goes to CSU. But I'm not sure that, you know, the sequence could be different. But it's not that the CSU, that there's some special meeting then. It's just that to hit the timeline, they want to be able to take it to the university wants to be able to take a deal to the CSU board in January.
And the city has no real incentive to make it happen quickly, right? I mean, they are losing some money, we think, still, based on the upkeep and all that, right? It's not a money-making entity at the moment.
And there's also the – I mean, a little bit earlier I sort of dismissed that it would affect the mayor's political standing or that we should predict what it'll do to his standing. But there is some pressure. I mean, you know, you had more than 50% of voters saying this is what we want to happen. And if after a year, which will be – you know, 2 months from now, nothing has happened, I think people are going to rightfully be like, well, what are you doing?
And if it looks really bad and it does look like it's falling apart, do you think that will be a dominant thing that to like join the platform of discussion for the next mayor race? Like, how does, I mean, Todd Gloria doesn't seem to really, or Todd Gloria or Barbara Bree, they don't really talk about sports that often, but could that be infused into the debate?
They both supported Measure G, though. So I don't.
Oh, they did.
Okay, yeah, they both.
And if you look at what Bree's done, she has tried to get involved in the negotiations, but there's been an opinion from the city attorney's office and just the sort of politics of it, and the formation of the mayor's negotiating team, which doesn't include any members of the city council, that basically said, this isn't something you can be involved in right now, councilwoman. I think she's tried to get involved. We've sort of joked around the office that, you know, when Nathan Fletcher is running for mayor in, like, you know, 16 years or whatever, he'll be saying, I'm going to finally do something about the Mission Valley Stadium. Yeah.
that'd be amazing if it gets to 16 years and they're...
It's still there?
There's a documentary about this plot of land that... Right. When are we to the point where we start thinking about those types of things?
Well, I think
the mystery of
you get to
Valley,
a certain point. I think the political perception sours, and then you have other people trying to capitalize on it, and probably try and push a citizens' initiative at some point. But I don't think we're at all close to freeze zone yet. You'd have to have some breakoffs and some sort of just indeterminable thing at this point. It seems more just like they're hassling over what would be probably about $50 million, which is really hard to sell to the public. 100 versus 50 million. Is, to me, the big difference in the valuation that I've heard thrown around from a lot of people in terms of deductions.
Yeah. My documentary is even called It Used to Be a Cornfield or something like that.
Once upon a time.
Horses.
The Murph's Cornfield or something like that.
Yeah. Weren't we talking about ponds before?
Like, yes.
Yeah.
I was very pro-pond.
I would actually prefer your documentary to be called I Was Very Pro-Pond.
I Was Pro-Pond.
A River Runs Through It Is Taken?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Pro-Pond. Yeah.
And I can't see any cinematography like they had in that one with our little, like, stream. I mean, they do call it the San Diego River, but I've fallen in it before, and it's...
And an adjacent river runs through it?
An adjacent fenced-off endangered species zone that runs through it.
That has pieces of garbage floating through it, yes.
So I have a question about the tuition stuff where, like, students could end up paying for this. What are some creative ways where they could actually get away with that? Not saying they would, but, you know, are there way you've studied a lot of like universities and how they're funded? Like, could this be kicked down the line to future generations where they see hikes in creative ways? I don't know.
Well, I'm going to put on my SDSU official hat and say student tuition and fees will not go to pay for this expansion. But okay, let's talk about how that could happen. Yeah. You know, one way is if this project, let's just say it cost a clean $1 billion, if they don't get revenue equal to $1 billion, that money comes from somewhere. So if they get $999 million, mm-hmm. some student tuition and revenue, or yeah, I don't know, I guess they could argue that they got like interest on some like savings thing, but that's student money. Like if they can't document, hey, this piece of revenue went to pay for this whole thing that we built there, I would argue that that's prima facie evidence that student tuition and fees went to pay for it. So yeah, and the other thing they could do is they, you know, when you're doing a public-private partnership, universities all around the country often do these deals where they put up students essentially as collateral with housing developers and say, hey, you build some apartment complexes, and then we guarantee
the students. Yeah,
we guarantee the students. I don't really think that counts because the students are going to have to live somewhere else, and that doesn't equal an increase in tuition. But that's another way that you could use students without technically raising tuition and without technically raising fees. But you could use students to pay for the project without saying that you're raising tuition and fees.
Which Fred Pierce is intimately involved with the company that does that. Am I not mistaken?
Oh, actually, I'm not sure.
Who's a friend of SDSU?
I am
friend
not
of
sure.
Friend of the podcast.
Yes.
He did build a... he built a certain amount of house, like student housing and school housing.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
similar sort of fashion where it's like high-end, like kind of luxury student housing sort of thing. So, I don't know.
Maybe we talked about this already on a different podcast and I forgot or whatever, but what would be wrong with raising tuition if the university's offering a better experience? Is that a state thing or is that just a SDSU perception thing? Or is that just people being like curmudgeonly?
Actually, I don't know that there is anything wrong with that. I mean, that's
like to me, it doesn't
outside
like,
of them saying they wouldn't.
Outside
oh,
of them,
oh the, so they did.
That
so
was part
like
of it.
A,
that
part
was,
of the political thing when they were putting it on the ballot.
That
got
was
it.
Part of the selling
yeah.
point.
That's what I missed. Sorry.
Yeah, that's yeah. a big part of it. I mean, if they said, "Hey, you know, we're probably going to have to increase student fees a little bit," we'd be like, "Okay, well, this is one way that they're financing the stadium. Thanks." But
yeah.
they said no, and we said how.
Interesting.
And they said we're not going to tell you, and then we said, "Well, we're going to see you in court."
Is, so that it's very much it was a, like a political type thing. It seems like not to to do that. Because from a business point of view, you would go, yeah, we're going to provide a much better experience. We're going the tuition will reflect that. I mean, any business would do that, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with raising tuition. I think to
right.
your point, it was specifically something that they said again and again on the campaign trail. And so, I mean, even if they do it, it's like, all right, that's still within your right. It's just the little fact of the matter that you said
that to win.
Well, they were competing
yeah.
against an initiative that was saying that it wouldn't cost San Diego anything.
Right.
You know,
so they had to. Very interesting how politics affect the whole thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think many students across the country are happy to. I mean, they're taking out student loans and then they're paying that back with interest over the years. But they're mostly happy to go to football games for what feels like free at the time.
Yeah.
I was happy to go to football games for what felt like free at the time.
Well, and live in nice new student housing versus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like all those things are.
Yeah.
Well, you're already making a big investment. Yeah. So you're already rolling that. It's the biggest thing you're going to pay for in your life up until you buy a house, you know, hopefully, if you ever can in this market. But yeah, it's a big deal. So it makes sense to roll it all together.
Yeah.
So if the deal goes through, could we see, I mean, this is for everybody, but like, could we see an attempt by the university? I mean, they've talked about it where they're looking for a partner to share the space. I mean, an MLS team, sorry, I don't know, anything like that. Like, is that's going to have to happen
in some capacity. in some capacity, and whether it's MLS or just some other soccer. I mean, there are several soccer, professional soccer leagues in this country and several amateur leagues as well, and I don't know what's stopping any of those from jumping on board with SDSU West.
Yeah.
So you've been referring to this lawsuit that you have the information. I'd like to know more about it. Let me know what's going on with it.
So the history of this is we asked for, we were talking to the university and they made this whole argument that student tuition and fees won't have to go up to pay for this expansion. We said, how do you know that? Or we said, show us how you know that. And they said, no. And so we said, okay, well, you know, we're going to take you to court. We have a, you know, we filed a Public Records Act request claim under California law. They denied it. They didn't release any of the, you know, documents that we wanted that we know they have, where they modeled how they're going to come up with the revenue to pay for the expansion. So we've been in court this pretty much this whole year. They eventually, right before around the time that, this ended up in court, they released a couple of records related to some contractors they'd hired. That was sort of helpful. We wrote a story about that. But the sort of substantive documents, that's their financial models that show how they expect to pay for it, they haven't released. In the past couple weeks, a judge has issued a tentative ruling, which is basically like a draft opinion, siding with the university. But the judge is going to entertain another argument from our attorney called a supplemental briefing. We have a very good attorney, Felix Tinkoff, shout out. And I think we have a really good argument, and I think we're acting in the public interest. So I hope that the judge finds the filing that we make enlightening and you know, requires the university to release these records. You know, there's been some talk about, like, what are you looking for? And so there was a stack of papers on the judge's desk in an envelope that I couldn't see, but that contains some of the very documents we're talking about, modeling spreadsheets, I presume.
He's making a yellow book-sized
motion
with it. Yeah, back when they had yellow books.
Yeah, we're talking about a
back when
big...
people paid for ads in the yellow book and it was thick.
Yeah.
It's one of those yellow books.
Yeah, it was a thick thing. And the university introduced sort of an interesting argument.
What was their argument to keep it secret? Because they're a public, right?
Well,
tax dollars go to this university, right?
They had a couple of different arguments. Essentially, comes down to this: you know, this could hurt us in negotiations. This wasn't meant for public consumption, that kind of thing. But one of their later arguments was that, look, if we release this stuff, you know, we've updated our modeling. This could, you know, result in confusion in the public if the old models were public but not the new models. Of course, the counter argument to that is, well, it would be great if you just released the new models too. But, you know, they're saying they're in the middle of a negotiation with the city, and this could affect those negotiations if it came out. Our point is, you're a public agency. You prepared these, like, even before some of these, I mean, prepared before there was really a negotiation, before the voters said, yeah, we want this deal to happen.
And we're talking about a negotiation between, like, two public entities, right? We're not talking about a negotiation between two private corporations. This is the city of San Diego and then, like, a state university. Both of these are publicly funded things. Where do they feel they have the right, I don't understand, honestly, to negotiate this in private? This should all just be, like, what is the best solution for both public institutions.
To that point, too, I think the election confusing. Sold it as this would be a process where we would know what was going on.
Right?
Based on Measure G's messaging was that they would have a transparent, they would say use that word almost in every single one of their campaign ads as well as on their big posters. It said transparent, and that was something that they pushed forward. And it is transparent in the fact that it's a university, but other than that, it's, you know, the I don't know, as dark as it is after Sky Show.
So one public entity can get a better deal from another public entity. The judge said they cannot tell us what's going on.
He said they don't have to.
They don't have to, right.
Yeah, and one of the things that really, I think, highlighted the absurdity to us is...
Okay, good. I'm not glad I'm not the only one.
was that, you know, we asked, you know, they've been paying some contractors and they've been continuing to hire different contractors to do, you know, different kinds of work on the stadium. We said, well, you know, how are you paying for them? And they say the revenue from the site.
Oh,
it's
a
property that they don't own that isn't generating revenue. And so I literally sent them a message. I said, are you putting it on an Amex? Like, is this money from the future that you're receiving to pay
for this? Like a bond.
The new Apple card gets cashed daily, I think. Maybe that.
And you don't even know. We don't even know how much they've spent on this.
Well, we do as of early this year because we threatened to sue them. They finally released some stuff, and then actually we asked for another contract with Legends, who's helping them understand, you know, how to generate revenue from ticket sales, and we had to threaten to sue them before they'd release that too. The university is being. frankly, surprisingly opaque. They to their credit, they have given us some documents eventually, but it's been pulling teeth, and I don't understand why.
Why stall, I guess, is the other question. So why are they stalling in the sense of not, you know, what do they stand to gain by getting more time as the university's, you know, negotiations roll on? Because the city knows what the site is. The city knows what it wants out of it. I think the city knows that a number around $100 million and, you know, owning most of the ongoing, you know, maintenance within the square footage of the site would be, you know, probably preferential in some way, and give or take, you know, a few million here or there based on those negotiations. But like, what else do they gain, I guess, by dragging it out? Do you think they think they can get a lower price just because everybody wants a deal at a certain point? Or
so I'm going to sidestep your question and answer a question I want to be asked, which is
that's fine. Wasn't a great question.
No. So one of the things that we've been trying not to do, and we don't do, is we don't speculate. And
right.
One of the kind of crap replies we've been getting lately is, well, why don't you do your own calculations to figure out if this project will pencil out? And we're like, why would you want us to speculate more than we have to? We asked the university for its own numbers. They will not give it to us. If we had them, we could tell you what is in fact their own speculation and wouldn't need to compound it with our speculation. It's just totally maddening.
Yeah.
Well, and that speculation could be so radically different. I mean, right? Like, you could really make up many different ways to make these numbers come together. That's a very funny thing. Well,
yeah, that wouldn't be
as a news organization, just come up with how you would do this deal.
Yeah. It's like, okay.
Maybe they want to cheat off you? I don't know. That's what
I just think
like.
everybody in town should have a stadium coalition. At some point, you should form a stadium coalition that answers these questions. It's happened the last every, you know, 3 years on the dot. So it's now your turn, I guess, Voice of San Diego, to come up with your own stadium coalition.
I'd rather not.
Yeah, right.
I'd rather just get public records from the public agency that paid to produce them with public money.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very...
Agreed.
It's very bizarre.
All right.
Well, yeah, if these whatever this lawsuit happens, I think we need to get another one going soon. It just sounds like...
Let's keep them rolling.
It's so bizarre. Yeah, because I don't understand why we're not allowed to know. This is not like national security. This is not, you know...
And there's facts. There's a certain amount of land. There's a certain amount of square footage value based on, you know, surrounding area and or, you know, concepts, right? Like,
yeah.
We're not talking about space here, like landing on the moon, right? We're talking about a piece of Mission Valley.
Sorry, hold on. No, right. There is another appraisal going on, though, now, though, right, as part of this negotiation?
Yeah, well, so that's an appraisal of the land as it exists, right? Yeah. And so that doesn't tell us how the university was able to conclude and tell the public it had concluded that no student tuition and fees would go to this project. That's really what we've been after, is, you know, how did you know this? And it would have really been super helpful before there was an election, but here we are after it. I personally don't like to be in court trying to get public records. It's not a fast way to do things, and the university has to pay to defend itself, but we did it because we thought at the point where we filed the lawsuit, it was the only way we saw of getting the truth out of the university, and we hope a judge will eventually agree.
I mean, we could talk about San Diego City, you know, getting stuff done all day, but
yeah.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Love it.
Pro Bond Pod.
Cool.
The show you just heard was part of the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. To hear other great shows like the Voice of San Diego Podcast, I Made It in San Diego, a show all about the people behind the region's businesses, the award-winning Culture Cast, The Kept Faith, a San Diego sports show, and more, please visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts. If you'd like to sponsor any of the podcasts, please email Erin at voiceofsandiego.org. That's E-R-I-N at VOSD.org. You are now listening to the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. For more information, visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts.